Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Coe, your host, and thank you so much for tuning in. So guys, we've done a lot of shows here about people who've had success, how they've found purpose in their life, and that is really the main topic of the show. Today, we're going way over to the extreme. This is a story of somebody who had a ton of success, but found herself in one of those life crisis moments that we all deeply fear. After losing a relationship that she'd been in for years, recognizing her sexuality, she thought she was in a straight relationship and she recognized she was gay, she changed her career. If all of that wasn't enough for a single person to handle, our guest, Suzanne Falter, also suffered the loss of her daughter, Teal, in 2012. And although this sounds like a conversation that will be sad and overwhelming, this is really a story of inspiration and joy. Suzanne goes there in this interview. She takes us to the day her daughter died. She goes through the whole story, but with so much recognition of what she has. And she took this difficult moment and turned it into a life-changing event. And when I say life-changing, she completely turned her life in a different direction. Her beliefs and her connection with her daughter, you know, I don't know what your belief systems are, how spiritually organized you are religiously, but for Suzanne, this became a deeply spiritual moment connecting with her daughter. So tune in, stay open. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Very, very interesting, very inspiring, and someone who I deeply respect, and I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to have heard her story. If you want to hear more about Suzanne Falter, you can find her on her site, suzannefalter.com. She has written in More Fitness, New York Times, Women's Day, Wall Street Journal, Self-Help. I mean, 100 TV and radio programs, articles, and columns have been everywhere. Her work has been published to more than 1.5 million people and have been touched by her writing. She has 200,000 people have read her work on Facebook. So this is a woman who has gotten her work out there. She's written a few books. She writes a blog. If you're interested in learning more about her, again, Suzanne Falter. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you like today's show. Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Coe, your host. Today we have Suzanne Falter joining us. Hey, Suzanne, how are you?
Hi, Laura. I'm happy to be here. That's how I am.
I'm so happy to have you. For those of you who haven't checked out the Before the Afterlife podcast, Suzanne hosts it, and I had the privilege of coming on her show. You can listen in. I don't know if it's posted yet, is it? But if not, it'll be up soon.
Coming shortly.
Coming shortly. Okay. And it was so much fun that we decided to reverse, have her come on The Art of Authenticity. Her story is so compelling, and you'll hear why as we go through this. So Suzanne, obviously, for anybody who's checked out her work, seen anything, she was a parent of two children, one of which was a 22-year-old daughter, and she lost her daughter in a sudden moment and has now just committed her life to helping people who suffer with trauma to help find fulfillment again. And we're going to talk about that in your story. But before we do, could you take us back before this crisis happened in your life? From what I understood in our quick chat, you were, you know, working hard, pulling lots of hours, kind of doing that classic workaholic.
Happy to share. The fact of the matter was I was one of those loathsome internet marketers, and I was highly successful, and I worked all the time, and I knew how to charge and get a lot of money for my work. And I knew how to work with the internet in such a way that I could create courses easily. They were helpful. I mean, I did have a genuine, honest-to-God advertising agency marketing background. And long before that, I had actually been an author. And I had written books about joy and happiness, one of which was actually quite a successful book in the 90s and into 2000 called How Much Joy Can You Stand? That, you know, sort of faded away as all these people jumped onto my community and I got carried away by the idea of teaching marketing. This was in the early-ish days of internet marketing and say 2003 to 2008 or 2012. And by the end of my run with marketing, I was in California working. Like I said, I was coaching people 8 hours a day, and I was doing work that was helpful and useful to people, but it was branding and platform building. And I knew it wasn't my real work. My gut feeling was, you're a writer, you're a speaker, you're here to help people in a much more holistic and healthy way than marketing. This is not the heart-based work you were put here to do.
And when you say it was a gut-based feeling, I'm so fascinated by this, of course, because I love authenticity, but was it gut-based, like a quiet whisper, or
like, I'd say it was a quiet drone. It was like, you are doing the wrong thing, just kind of all the time. And I could block it out. And as the paychecks, and you know, I was doing events with hundreds of people, and I was selling extremely high priced coaching programs. And as it got bigger and bigger and bigger, the drone got a little louder, and I kept ignoring it more and more fervently. And shortly before Teal, my daughter's death, she died in August of 2012. And in May of 2012, three things happened. My business partner and I decided the pace we were going at was unsustainable, and that, in fact, we didn't want to keep doing this particular business we were doing. So that started to fall away. And the relationship I was in, I had come to California to start my life over a year and a half earlier as a lesbian. I had left my 25-year marriage, and I'd set out to start all over again. And that I got into a relationship that was not a healthy relationship. I gave up my apartment and moved in with a person who then broke up with me almost immediately. So I had just lost my apartment and my relationship, and the business fell away. And then Teal suddenly died. It was a really intense experience. And I mean, I was already kind of like crawling along from the loss of the business and the relationship and the apartment, even though I knew I was going towards something better and that it was the right thing. I was really just consumed by uncertainty. And for the first time since I had come to California, I began to be scared and uncertain. You know, I had been very cocky when I arrived, like, hey, I'm going to roll this internet marketing business, and I'm going to be awesome, and I'm in San Francisco, and let's go do this life. And the only thing that remained that was really authentic was being a lesbian, which it had taken me to age 52 to wrap my head around and really own myself.
And when you say that, I mean, you're at the top of your game with all of this work, right? It's pouring in. You said the money was, you know, going up, but that sensation, right, that droning voice was going up at the same time. I find that so fascinating, because the success that we're after, you'd think that voice would get a little quieter instead of louder, right?
Well, because it was the wrong success. Yeah, and Laura, let me tell you, I knew I was good at marketing. I've always had a gift for it. And my gift for marketing is that I can intuit what people feel or think, generally speaking. It just happens to be my natural thing that I can do. Mm-hmm. And it helps me as a writer. It helps me in creating content. It helps me as a speaker. And it certainly is useful in, you know, helping other people figure their stuff out as niching and branding. But, you know, I'm a spiritual woman, and I knew that this was not my life's work. And I also knew, although I denied it, that at some point it was going to end. I just had no idea it was going to come crashing down so fast. And believe me, I had no idea that my daughter would die.
Yeah, because here you are making what are proactive decisions, right? I'm going to change my business. I'm going to change my relationship, go towards things that feel more authentic or aligned, or whatever the word is that you like to use in your life. And although that's really difficult and the relationship isn't working, now you find yourself in this personal crisis. How did you, I mean, this was over a 3-month period, you said?
Yeah. May was the beginning of the unraveling. I think my business partner and I started talking about not working together around April. And we were both stressed out. Our events were, you know, booked like boom to boom to boom, but they were starting to decline slightly in attendance. Mm. So we kind of took that as a much needed sign to retreat. And we had sold programs that took us into July or something. And the last one had just ended when Teal died. And I just want to explain her death because I'm sure listeners were like, well, what the heck happened?
Yeah,
So Teal was epileptic and she had a moderate case of epilepsy that was well controlled by drugs. 1 in 1,000 epileptics die from something called sudden death in epilepsy, which is a very poorly understood phenomenon in which people just die and they don't know why. And essentially that night I went to dinner with her and in a very nice restaurant. We went to hear a lecture about shamanism, and a tribe in the Ashuar tribe in Ecuador was part of the subject of the evening. And she really wanted to be a healer. And she was just starting to embark on a path as a healer. And the next day she was going to begin courses at City College that she thought would teach her about being a healer. And in this talk, the speaker kept referencing the space between the walking life and the afterlife. And every time they did, she turned around and stared at me with this very strange expression. And she was acting very spacey. She was an hour late for dinner. These are not typical behaviors. And what I didn't realize was that she was having very tiny absence seizures. And it was the precursor to a very big seizure, maybe, which we'll never know about because she went home from the restaurant. I got her a ride home. And she went home to her apartment that she shared with another person. And she went in the bathroom and locked the door and collapsed from a cardiac arrest. She was in there for 15 minutes to 30 minutes without a heartbeat before she was discovered by her housemate, who then had to break down the door to save her. And during that period of time, you know, she sustained a lot of brain damage. So for the next 6 days, she was on a respirator. And her brain was so damaged that that was the end of her life. We had to take her off life support after 6 days. So that's how she died.
Unbelievable. And I mean, that alone, right, is if everything else in your life is intact, will take a person to their knees. I know now you work with people who are suffering from trauma. What do you do at this point? Do you just go into a shell? Like, do you turn to friends? Like, how do you start?
Well,
what are the next few months?
You grieve and you grieve and you grieve. But like for me, I'm this front of the room person. I wanted to be a leader in all things, right? So I couldn't allow myself to fall apart. That took a year. So I spent the first year being quote unquote fine, but still being unable to really get out of bed or do anything or run a business. But yeah. I was fine. Yeah. I didn't need a grief group. I'm fine.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was just this very interesting, very broken time. And, you know, the night of her collapse, I went into her hospital room and I sat with her and I had this deep sense that this was the beginning of an entirely different purpose for me and that I was going to write about this. And that this was the beginning of everything, that my life would really begin as hers was ending. And I knew she would die. I could feel the whole thing. And that this experience, this exchange in the restaurant where she was looking at me so intensely as if to communicate, this is very important. That really made an impression on me. And I began to really take very seriously. I made my new purpose becoming a better person. Becoming a person who was really living true to my values instead of hiding from them and pretending it didn't matter.
I mean, I know people out there are having the same experience. It's just, you get goosebumps when listening to you relay this story, just because in this time of difficulty, there's so much clarity and purpose and meaning that's also coming through. And you mentioned you started hearing her voice right away to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I want to say, like what I always say about this is I heard so much more from her in the afterlife than I did when she was in her 20s and she was walking around San Francisco. Let me tell you that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this has been an interesting thing. I mean, I've always been open to this kind of thing, but even I thought that I was going crazy in the beginning because I was really hearing from her. And I was experiencing rushes, intense rushes of joy through my body for the first year. Whenever I kind of thought about her or connected with her, my whole body would become kind of electric with her energy and I could really feel her around me. You know, one of the first things that she really was telling me was that it was okay to just be. Like she used to say that when she was alive. She used to say, "Mom, just be." And she was this 20-something, total free spirit. She was a world traveler. She would work, you know, with her little clipboard getting money for Planned Parenthood on the street, or she'd be a, you know, make lattes and save her money. And then she would go, you know, she'd take her money to an airport and she'd look at the list of departures.
Come on.
International. I'm not kidding. And she would just say, okay, C, take me to, you know, Calabria. Or,
oh my God.
She would do that. Like, she'd go over to Europe. She'd go to Ireland and then she'd go into the airport in Dublin and she'd pick a city and she'd just go. And she wound up going all over the place. And she did this alone. She did this alone and she hitchhiked all over Europe alone, which I didn't find out later.
How are you as this hard driving businesswoman, 8 hours of coaching a day? I mean, I can't even, I'm a coach. I can't comprehend that. Still stuck on that point. You've got this free.
Well, let me tell you, you know how it was? I was not in my body. That's how I was.
Yeah. I mean,
I was totally not in my body. It was not safe to be in my body because my, you know, I have this inner German soldier. I've been writing a memoir about Thiel that's almost finished and about this time since her death. And I really connected while I was writing with my inner German soldier. And my inner German soldier is this like hilarious character who's always saying Achtung to me, you know. Hurry up, mach schnell,
yeah.
Faster, faster, right?
Yeah, I mean, so you're like, I had my phase at my company where, you know, there was days I couldn't find time to get to the water cooler just to get water, but, you know, client calls for some reason makes me even shiver more. But, and to anybody out there that's listening, I love coaching, but that is something to do that many hours in a day. I'm just wondering though, while you're doing all this and you're working so hard and you've got this daughter who's so free spirited, what is she saying to you? Is she in her life expressing, you know, Mom, why are you doing this? Or
she was on a very specific spiritual path and her whole deal became acceptance and unconditional love. Mm-hmm. So she, you know, for instance, I really read her journals after she died. And she, first of all, she was channeling all these incredible little phrases like, give fearlessly and you shall never want.
What?
You know, I mean, yeah, I'm not kidding. And she had this sense of purpose that was way out there. It was way
wow.
out there. So she was looking at what I was doing like, okay, mom is going on mom's path and mom will go as far as she can go. But one of the things I wrote about in the very beginning of the memoir was how she, one day, towards the very end of my time in my little apartment, when I was about to move in with this partner of mine in another city near San Francisco, she said, have you ever once looked at the sunset out these windows? Now, I lived on a corner apartment in San Francisco with a 180-degree view that included the Golden Gate Bridge and the Bay Bridge and swept out over the entire Castro, Twin Peaks. I mean, spectacular view. You could even see the ocean in the distance. Had I ever looked at the sunset? Hell no. Who had time for a sunset, right? So, Thiel says to me, Mom, you're doing it now. And she said, I am calling you to check in. Like, you're going to sit down now and watch the sunset. So I, you know, she walked out the door. I put down what I was doing and I started to watch the sunset and I couldn't do it because mm-hmm. the minute I became still and calm, all of the droning became louder. The sense that I was making a huge mistake moving in with this woman was very, very big. All of my anxiety, my fear, that my trying to cling to this life that needed to fall away, it all became overwhelming. And of course, I had to get right back to my boxes and be busy and pack and not watch the sunset. Uh-huh. And then, of course, she called like, well, did you watch it? And of course, I lied and said, oh, yes, honey, it was lovely, you know, because I was flawed. You know, what can I say?
Everything you're saying is so powerful. And to everybody listening, it's like, we work so hard to check all of these boxes and person after person I interview comes on here. And that's why I wanted to find people who had success to debunk this myth, because here you are at the, you know, place that people, they think this is the moment you're going to find all the happiness and that everything will come together. All I have to do is check, 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 make certain amounts of money, make six figures, make, you know, 200,000, 300,000, 500,000, whatever the number is, get a view that looks out over a sunset. And then I will like love my sunset. And it doesn't work that way, right? You feel more and more stressed and life takes on this quality where it's hard to embrace anything. And I think what you're saying, this inability to sit still is such a tell sign, right? That
yes, if you, yes,
yeah,
yes. And I'll tell you, the big quest for the next 2 years for me was, I can't just do nothing. I have to do something. What am I supposed to be doing?
Oh, yeah.
So I tried to restart. Well, first of all, I had a business ready to go that I launched a month after her death, as if nothing had happened. And I actually sold this little class and I filled it up and all these people were in it and I led the classes. And at the end of it, I just collapsed. And it was like, wasn't even that big a deal, relatively speaking, but it was the all I could do to show up and lead this class. So at the end of it, a friend of mine said, you have to stop. And I agreed. And I did stop. But the whole time I kept stopping, thinking, but I can't totally stop. I can sort of stop, but I can't totally stop, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one by one, my attempts to keep going failed, including a year and a half later. Now, this is almost 2 years after her death. No, it was about 18. It was about 20 months after her death. I tried to sell once again one of my old most successful products, which I could usually just like put it out there and boom, people would snatch it right up at a very high price. I tried to do that again. And I pulled out an old sales page and I kind of dusted it off and I made it a little bit warmer and fuzzier because, you know, hey, I'm learning something here. And immediately a bunch of people bought it. And I went to bed feeling all good about it. And when I woke up in the morning, everybody was demanding a refund because someone had hacked into the website and totally killed the whole learning area. And for the next week, it got hacked into five more times, each time my assistant rebuilt the site. So finally, I took the whole thing down. I gave everybody their money back. And I said, I surrender. Guide me. Tell me what to do. And
wow.
And
you've given me the goosebumps like five times, I just want to say.
Well, it's a goosebumpy story, Laura, because the fact of the matter is I had to learn to surrender.
Uh-huh.
And one of the, you know, I kept worrying, well, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? I've got to have a purpose here. But what I didn't understand was at that time, my purpose was to do nothing and to rest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And finally, it became clear that my purpose was to take excellent, excellent care of myself. And over time, and I, you know, I was writing little blog posts and I was doing little bits of things, but generally I was just resting and I rested for 3 years.
Wow.
And what is really remarkable is that the money kept showing up to take care of me. Everything I needed was provided. And I started to live more and more and more simply. And I started to live like Teal did at the end of her life. At the end of her life, she was earning $20,000 a year, standing on the corner of, you know, in Union Square in San Francisco with a clipboard asking people to donate money to Planned Parenthood. That's how she made her living. And she lived on, you know, she couch surfed. She, you know, ate very, very simply. She bought her clothes secondhand. And by this point, year two, that's what I was doing. I didn't have the clipboard going because I was resting, but
yeah.
I was just living in a totally different way. I had cut all my expenses. A friend invited me to come live with her and cook for her. And I loved cooking. So that made me happy. And I just had this blessed, super simple existence that required almost nothing.
And how and is that droning sound in your head?
Gone.
Yeah.
It was gone. And what it was replaced with was just rest, or as Teal liked to say, just be. And here's what's really cool. The way she communicated with me, it was about 2.5 years into this, maybe around two years, actually. It was a point at which a whole lot of things began to change for me. And I woke up in the morning and I had a vision of the bathroom right next to the bedroom I was sleeping in at my friend's house. And the door was shut and there was a very bright light coming out around the edges of the door. And I said, are you in there? Knowing she was in there. And she said, yes. And I said, why won't you let me see you? And she said, because I don't want you to get distracted. Okay. Do you have a message for me? And she said, you are whole and complete and ready to go. It's safe to begin now. Okay. I said, all right. Show me what to do. And that was all I got. It was just like, okay, the on button got pushed. And now you're just going to wait and see what shows up. And maybe 2 months after that, a couple of things happened. One is I met the love of my life within a few weeks of that, who I have since married, who who is a really extraordinary woman, and I believe my true soulmate, who I came to California to be with ultimately.
Oh,
that happened,
yeah.
Which is just incredible. That alone is incredible.
Yeah.
But the other thing that happened was that I was sitting in my office and I was feeling very sorry for myself because I didn't know what my purpose was. And I'm supposed to be ready to go, but what am I supposed to be doing? And I hear Teal say to me, "Clean out your inbox, Mom." Now, you know, my inbox was this wire basket that was filled with 6 inches of forgotten papers. And I had been moving a lot, you know, from place to place. And each time I'd moved, I'd hauled the unemptied inbox to its new location and never looked at it. So I was like, come on, really? Okay. So I clean out my inbox. I put everything, you know, away. There's one document left in the bottom of the inbox. And I'm sitting there like, I don't know what this is all about. You know, I've followed the instructions. Now, where's my answer? I turn over the paper in the bottom and it's a letter Teal had written me 6 months before her death. And in the letter, she talked about being a leader in love and light and that we were meant to do this work together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I don't know, you know, she was just such an extraordinarily serene, peaceful, and loving person. And I was so fortunate to be her mother, you know, and now we're on this learning path together. And I feel her around me all the time. And I understand that my job, my purpose is just to keep putting out, you know, healing podcasts and healing blog posts and to keep on working on being the best person I can. I'm writing a memoir that will be done in the next few months. And, you know, this is my path.
You speak about your inner dialogue with her so freely and comfortably. Was there ever a phase where before she passed away, is this something you had believed in? And then afterwards, was there ever time that you doubted this voice as being, you know, something to listen to?
No. You know, not only have I never doubted it, I've never doubted that this was God's will. Mm. And, you know, I've always felt totally surrendered to the idea of her death. You're supposed to go through this angry phase. Now, believe me, I was furious with the person who had dumped me after I moved into her apartment. That phase was pretty darn angry, but I've never had anger about Teal's death. I've always felt it was exactly what was supposed to happen.
Unbelievable.
I've never had regret. I've never had the feeling of, you know, if only she was alive, I could see her get married, because I have such a strong sense of this shared purpose.
Yeah.
And of this work that we have done healing people. It's now the work I do is I speak on the subject of self-care for people who are stressed out or people who work with trauma. You know, currently one of the places I speak is the organ procurement world, because I'm a donor mom. We donated her organs and several people were saved, including a young woman her age who got her heart. And this, you know, is this unique qualification I now have to speak in the organ procurement world about the experience of losing Teal, but also about what I learned about self-care, because I spent, you know, I got to spend 2 years doing what most people never get to do, which is taking impeccable care of myself and allowing myself to fully heal and recover from the worst thing you can experience.
Yeah. And I mean, to everybody out there that doesn't give themselves any time, right? We show up for everything and everybody, and we feel guilty if we do anything for ourselves. I'm sure before this happened, you can relate to that concept, and probably, you know, if you were not going to sit down for sunset, you probably weren't doing too much of it. What's your advice now, having gone through all this, to this concept of self-care? I love that you're saying that people talk about their purpose all the time and they're white knuckling looking for that bigger purpose, like life purpose.
I know. You know, isn't that ironic?
Yeah. And you're saying like, I just had this short-term purpose of just self-care, especially for women. I mean, what is your advice today on this topic?
Well, thank you for that question, because really what I notice, the big thing I notice, there's two things that have happened. I built a regular meditation practice into my day. So every morning when I wake up, I meditate for anywhere from 10 to 25 minutes and say some prayers. And that's my start to the day. And what that has done is chill me the hell out. So it's allowed me to not care if I don't get my to-do list done. Mm. Will the world end? No. Did I do as much writing today as I could have? No, in fact, I didn't do any because my body was like, eh, not today.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a gun pointed to my head about when that writing has to be delivered? No. Occasionally I get a hard deadline. I just finished a workbook for a workshop I'm leading it next month, and I really did have to stick to the deadline, and I did it. And then I gave myself like 2 days off to recover. I am not working with super large amounts of stress anymore. It's just not part of my life. I don't need it. I don't want it. And I decided that the world will not end if everything doesn't get done on the to-do list. Yeah. If you really look at it, that's true. Like, yeah. I learned that when Teal died, my whole to-do list went out the window. It ended immediately.
Yep.
And everything was okay.
Right. Everybody just dealt with it. I know we take ourselves so seriously and we think,
amen.
Yeah. Mm. And we think if I don't do the to-do list, then I won't get to the place where I have all the things that I need to have. But again, all those things that we quote need to have can become such a burden and not the point of life.
This is so true, Laura. And I'll tell you something. I was worried about money, you know, understandably, as I went through this whole healing process, this 3-year healing process. But amazing things happened. And I received a small inheritance suddenly that kind of wasn't expected. And then I was approached by someone who loved my writing, who wanted to hire me to write a series of novels with him. So I took it and I accepted. And that has provided a very big piece of my income.
Yeah.
And then out of the blue, people who knew me from the organ procurement scene asked if I would be willing to do some speaking. It's all come to me. I couldn't have begun to go out and force this path to happen. I tried and we saw what happened. So I had to do what Teal kept saying to do, which was just be, just be, just be. She had this great quote in her journal and it said, "How do I make hard decisions? Turn off brain, ask body."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know I had this one woman come on and she said, everything in my life at this point is a full body yes. If it's not a full body yes, it's a no.
And I love that.
Yeah.
The full body yes is a very evocative phrase. And every time I hear it, it's like such confirmation of my inner knowing and my inner space. And I just adore that.
So do people need to hit their own wall and have their own crisis? Or is this something that we can learn and prevent people from going through?
The ego is part of the psyche that's set up to protect us from change because it assumes the status quo is what we want.
Yeah.
And it will fight us. If a listener is like, yeah, I'm going to just be, I can guarantee that they haven't been just being, but that's a new way to roll through life. Their ego will be like, no, not you, Mr. or Miss. Mm-hmm. Get out there. Stop mm-hmm. just being. Start doing.
And we can't just be because of scarcity. Is that the number one reason in your mind? Or what would you say?
Mean why people don't just be? I think fear. It's fear. It's fear of feeling, fear of the unknown, fear of change, fear of what if I realize I don't want to be married to my spouse, fear of what am I going to freaking do if I throw my life away? Well, what I can tell you is if you're guided to throw your life away, follow it. It's golden advice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is an op. I really do, in truth, feel that my daughter's death was probably the hardest thing I ever went through, but it's been one of the best things I ever went through because it gave me back my heart. And she would agree. She would be like, Mom, you so needed this.
Oh my God, you gave me goosebumps again. I'm not somebody who gets goosebumps every 4 minutes. So Suzanne, I ask everybody who comes on the show, what does then an authentic life mean to you?
Oh, well, an authentic life is lived with great joy. That's it. Going for the thing that brings you joy. And as I'm saying that, I'm looking at a picture of me and my dear girl. This is making me a little teary. And yeah. We're sitting in this bakery with a lemon tart between us because that was her favorite thing. And she always wanted to go for joy. But what was great about Teal is she was able to do it without having to blow a whole lot of money because there's joy in the simplest things.
Yeah.
And that's where the life of purpose comes from. It's not about, you know, we all know it's not about what you have, but it's what you be. It's what you be.
Yeah. Is that why your podcast is Before the Afterlife? Is that the concept?
Oh, well, she named it because she thought she was being funny. And yeah, it's Before the Afterlife because the point is to become the person who can die happy,
yeah.
really happy, really happy. Yeah. Like before you get to the afterlife, why can't we be as happy now as we will be on the other side?
Amen. I don't know what else to say after that. Suzanne, you've been just an incredibly honest, generous guest and sharing your story in such a vulnerable
Thank you.
Way. I just Thank appreciate you showing up such a such a beautiful way. And if people are looking to find out more about you, your podcast, your writing, where can they find you?
Well, my podcast can be found if you Google Before the Afterlife, or if you go to my website, SuzanneFalter.com/podcast.
Perfect. And I'll be out there so you can check out our conversation in reverse. Again, thank you so much for joining us and chatting with everybody today.
Yeah, a great joy, Laura. Thank you.